Plus, if you played well, it would feel good to know you were able to, even on a tough day. See Chapter 8 for more. 2. Know the solid parts of your game that are trained to the level of unconscious competence. While these are basic skills, just knowing them proves your entire game can't disappear, even while on tilt. Losing gets personal. Competing against other players, especially heads-up, makes winning a personal challenge in which there is a lot more at stake than just money. Losing means they got the better of you, and they're the ones who get to feel superior, not you, even if they just got lucky. It can be tilting just thinking that another player, especially a weaker one, believes they are better than you. If it also happens against someone you have a history with, then tilt is even worse. While your actions may not turn into revenge tilt, the discussion and strategies in that section are relevant enough to help you solve this version of hate losing tilt. Losing hurts more than winning feels good. For many players, losing feels worse than winning feels good. Prospect theory. That means they're not only competing to win, they're also competing to avoid the negative feelings that come with losing. Competitive people can be really hard on themselves when they lose. Self-criticism can show up in many ways, such as rhetorically asking, "Why do I suck so bad?" or "How am I ever going to be any good if I can't beat this jackass?" Regardless of how self-criticism shows up, it combines with the other factors described in this section to make losing hurt badly. In fact, badly enough that winning never feels equally as good and becomes more of an escape from the torture of losing. Players who see winning as an escape from losing are the same ones who think the answer to the pain of losing is to just win. If I just win, everything will be fine. Winning temporarily allows you to avoid the agony of defeat. But since losing is guaranteed to happen as long as you play poker, it's better to solve the real problem than to stick a bandage on it. The real problem here is there are more reasons to feel bad about losing than reasons to feel good about winning. Consequently, you anticipate losing to feel more negative, and when that's true, it tilts you even more. By reducing the unnecessary and flawed reasons that losing hurts, the pattern observed by prospect theory goes away. The first step in breaking this pattern is to know that prospect theory is an observation, not a law of human nature. This pattern is real, it just isn't permanent. To improve it, resolve the reasons why losing hurts more than winning by using the methods described previously in this section. Mistake tilt. Learning means making mistakes. When you aren't making mistakes, it's because you already know what is correct. At a basic level, being frustrated for making a mistake is reasonable. You have goals in poker, and it sucks to perform poorly. Being frustrated by mistakes isn't necessarily a problem, and it can even be a good thing when it provides motivation to actually do the work to fix it. What distinguishes mistake tilt as a problem is frustration that's so intense that it affects your play, leads to more mistakes, and ultimately makes it harder to fix the mistake you're making. Mistake tilt is something you may not even realize you experience, as it's often hidden by more obvious reasons to tilt. For instance, bad beats and running bad. Also, players don't routinely talk about hating mistakes, even though many do. Only when they're asked direct questions about making mistakes does it become clear that their mistakes cause them to tilt. Since the issue is obscure, to help identify whether it's a problem for you, here are some statements made by players who hate mistakes when asked, "What is it about making mistakes that makes you so angry?" "It feels like such a waste of time and money. It's going to take a long time to make up for it. It makes me feel like a failure. It means I'm not as good as I thought. It's inexcusable to be making such obvious mistakes at this point in my career. I put the time in, I should have known better. I'm never going to be a great player if I keep making the same stupid mistakes over and over. Feels like I've taken a huge step backwards. It's worse when already on tilt because the mistakes are so basic. I'm concerned what others will think, such as players, coaches, or friends. I just erased a day's work with one stupid effing move." Embedded within each of these statements are the underlying reasons why mistakes cause players to tilt. The remainder of this chapter breaks down the common underlying reasons for mistake tilt, making it easier for you to resolve. While there are several underlying reasons, they are all connected in some way to fundamental errors in your understanding of the learning process and the nature of performance. Mistakes are essential to improving as a player. In essence, by hating them, you hate improving. Of course, very few people think in that way, but your reaction shows that at the level of unconscious competence, you hate mistakes. When these errors are corrected, it not only means that mistake tilt goes away, but you're also going to be better at fixing poker mistakes and learning the game in general. Ultimately, you'll become a stronger player. When mistakes are viewed as a problem, they naturally cause tilt, especially when they continue to happen in big spots, when moving up in stakes, or against a regular who you can never beat. As you analyze your reasons why mistakes cause you to tilt, also keep in mind the situations that make your tilt worse and why. Expecting perfection. You manage to unlock everything you've been working on and play an incredible session or tournament, or get on a longer streak of perfect play. You've reached a new height in your game where great play has become the standard, and now you expect this new standard to show up every time you play. Mistakes and poor play have become a distant memory and no longer even seem possible. Unfortunately, reaching this new height in your game doesn't come with much satisfaction, since it was expected, and now any mistake, no matter how slight, is met with your wrath. You either feel neutral about playing perfectly, or you beat yourself senseless at the slightest presence of a mistake. That seems fair. Perfect play is a moving target that is attainable at times. However, it's not possible to achieve a permanent poker nirvana where poker is easy forever. The simple reason that can't happen is that your best gets better and your definition of perfection increases. Essentially, when you achieve a new peak in your game, your newly minted A game pushes your old A game to your B game, and your old B game becomes your C game. Having your skill set continually moving along as though on a conveyor belt is the nature of how improvement happens over time. On a larger scale, the game evolves when thousands of poker players go through this process. The roots of mistake tilt begin to take hold when at your peak. You've found permanent perfection, a poker paradise where you never make mistakes and the game is easy, only you're forgetting it's an illusion. The last time you reached a peak, you thought you'd found nirvana, only to realize you still have weaknesses. It can be easy to believe that weaknesses don't exist while at the top of your game, and that's why making a mistake is so frustrating. You weren't expecting to make one, even though it was bound to happen. The way to reach your next peak is by correcting weaknesses. As the concept of Inchworm illustrates, the underlying weaknesses in your game that cause mistakes have to be corrected for the back end of your range to take a step forward. Only when your worst has improved are you able to take steps towards the next peak in your game. Rather than expect perfection, keep striving for it by continually correcting your mistakes. Lastly, when you expect perfection, there's an assumption that you already know the correction and how to subtly apply it to all the unique situations in which that mistake happens. Basically, you are assuming that you've already mastered the correction, but making a mistake proves that you haven't. This is the real mistake in the situation. To correct problems with perfectionism, try the following. 1. Gain a more realistic view of the learning process so you can prove why perfection cannot be attained all the time. With stronger knowledge about learning, you automatically won't expect perfection and instead can have it as a goal. Review Chapter 2 for more. 2. When you play perfectly, feel good about it. Reaching the top of your game deserves some recognition since you've worked hard to get there. Playing perfectly is not expected. It's a goal. Recognizing what you've accomplished doesn't mean you have to get caught up reveling in your own greatness. You just need to feel good about it. 3. When you play perfectly, also take a close look at how you got there. Knowing how you achieve results strengthens your ability to achieve future results. Plus, if you eliminate weaknesses in your approach to learning and performance, such as distractions, procrastination, or mistake tilt, then you become more efficient when striving for the next peak and can get there faster. Injecting logic. Mistakes are going to happen. The bigger mistake is letting one turn into more. When a mistake is not a mistake, poker is inherently a game of deception. Unfortunately, the deception extends to your perception of your game. Run hot and you think you played great. Run bad or even just lose one hand and you think you played terribly. While this kind of deception is a major reason why poker is so profitable, it also causes a unique type of mistake tilt. Players often think they made a mistake while playing, only to realize afterwards that their decision actually was close and perhaps not a mistake at all. Thinking you make mistakes wouldn't be a problem if it didn't then lead to tilt and ultimately making real mistakes. So oddly enough, to cause this type of mistake tilt, you just have to think you make a mistake and not actually make one. Therefore, being able to know when a mistake is actually a mistake is the key to eliminating this type of tilt. If you want to stop yourself from going on tilt and spewing money in this way, the solution is to fix the real mistake, your inability to recognize mistakes in real time. It sounds simple enough, but can you name the weaknesses or common mistakes in your game right now? If not, then you don't know the weak parts of your game well enough to spot them as they happen. Here's how to correct your inability to recognize mistakes while playing. 1. Analyze the full range of your game from your best to your absolute worst. Write down all the mistakes when tilted, tired, autopiloting, and distracted. Next, write down the mistakes made when you're playing poorly, but not that bad. Finally, write out your standard B-game mistakes. Work on the list for a few weeks, adding to it after each time you play before finalizing it. Study it, and then at the table when you see a certain mistake show up, you'll get instant feedback on how well you're actually playing. If you don't make any of these mistakes, then you can continue to focus on playing well. If you lose the hand, it's either due to variance or a new mistake that you couldn't have known about and can't analyze while playing. Take note of the hand, move on, and stay focused on playing well. 2. Regularly evaluate your game to keep your understanding up to date. Over time, as the worst aspects of your game are eliminated, take them off your list. Then, when new mistakes show up in your B game, add them to your list. This way, you have a steady stream of things to work on. Injecting logic. Just because you lost the hand doesn't mean you played it badly. Obvious mistakes. An obvious mistake is, well, obvious, and that's the problem. It's not a close decision that could have gone either way. It's blatantly obvious and so incredibly stupid and incomprehensible that you can barely believe it just happened. Since an obvious mistake usually happens because you're already tilting, autopilot and overconfidence being two other big reasons, making such a bonehead mistake causes the tilt of tilt and throws you completely over the edge. For some, this may be the first sign that they're actually on tilt. This kind of mistake is hard to wrap your head around because it seems so wildly out of character for your game. If you keep playing, mistakes continue to pile up, and tilt continues to rise until you eventually quit. But the problem doesn't end there. Then begins the aftermath of trying to make sense of how the hell this could have happened. As you struggle to come up with an answer beyond, "I'm an idiot tilt monkey," the next few days are a struggle because it's tough to get the mistake out of your head while trying to relax, hanging with friends, sleeping, or playing in future sessions. Correcting an obvious mistake is a challenge for sure, but as with any other problem, the correction starts by knowing what caused it. The mistakes are obvious to you because of how severe the gap is between these mistakes and your normal game. The decisions you make when emotions rise too high because of tilt or are too low when autopiloting, bored, or tired are made using the knowledge of poker that you've mastered to the level of unconscious competence. Regardless of what you may think you've mastered, the skills that disappear do so because you hadn't learned them to that level yet. There's more. Since the mistakes you're making are so basic, it's very likely that accumulated tilt or another mental game leak is preventing them from being corrected to the level of unconscious competence. It's as if accumulated tilt is a worker on an assembly line holding up production. Instead of a final product, you're left with an unfinished pile. In this case, poker knowledge is stuck in the process of being learned and is being held short of getting to unconscious competence. As a result, you're forced to think about all the new poker knowledge in order to be good at it. Conscious competence. When thinking stops, as it does when tilting or autopiloting, you have no chance of being able to play correctly in these spots, and an obvious mistake happens. Here's how to stop making obvious mistakes. 1. Revisit the AOM and Inchworm and the section Malfunctioning Mind. These sections explain how an obvious mistake can happen. Once you know why it happens, the extra layer of anger created by not knowing then disappears. This means you can focus on fixing either your accumulated tilt or any other mental game problem and can correct the obvious mistake. 2. After making an obvious mistake, decide whether to keep playing or to quit. If you decide to keep playing, work hard to reduce the mental game mistake, tilt, autopilot, overconfidence, etc., that caused it, so you can focus on playing as well as you can. 3. Prioritize improving the mental game leak that leads to making such obvious mistakes. Otherwise, you have very little chance of correcting these mistakes. Threatens your goals. You want to be playing up at Rail Heaven or winning bracelets, but making mistakes, especially obvious ones, seems like a big setback in achieving that dream. When the following reaction happens after tilting because of mistakes, it's because your poker goals are under attack. I can't believe I just wasted my time and money. I just erased everything I'm working for. I failed. I'm never going to be a great player if I keep making these mistakes. When you have a flawed understanding of the learning process, it means you also have a flawed understanding of how to achieve goals. Expectations rise too high, and you end up thinking you can do more in less time. When mistakes happen, naturally tilt shows up because it seems as if your goals are being destroyed. It seems as if you're failing, and your goals can't be achieved. But really, the mistake is a lack of understanding about the learning process. Correct this problem by understanding more about learning and by removing any flaws in how you set goals. For more about setting goals, go to Chapter 7. Know too much, mastered too little. With the massive amount of poker education now available, it's easy for players to want to gain more knowledge than their skill can handle. With so much available to learn, players can end up being too liberal in what they define as a mistake. It's like a teenager driving a race car soon after learning to drive. All that technology would be too much for their basic skill level. If that driver were to crash, is it a mistake? No. Mistakes are only mistakes relative to their range. Bell curve and inchworm. Here's a purposefully dramatic example to prove this point. A 25-50 regular evaluating the game of a 50-cent dollar player, to their standard, identifies mistakes the weaker player can't even comprehend. The stronger player sees flaws in how they balance their range, size up their bets, play the turn, level the regulars, and much more. So if the 50-cent dollar player tries to correct the mistakes spotted by the 25-50 regular, it's the equivalent of trying to run before they can even walk. The 50-cent dollar player is going to be much better off applying knowledge relevant to the level they are playing. New knowledge is built upon a foundation of the old. You don't suddenly learn about G-Bucks calculations when you start at 100 NL. You first learn about ascribing ranges and equity calculations to get a strong understanding of the mathematics in poker. Learning poker is much like progressing through the belts in karate. In order to perform higher level concepts, you must first master the concepts in the level below. Unlike karate, your poker education may not be so organized that you can be certain of what to learn next. Whether the problem is disorganization or consuming too much information, this type of mistake tilt develops because you know more about poker concepts theoretically than you can actually apply while playing. Basically, you have too much to think about and too little mastered to the level of unconscious competence. When you achieve mastery of the basic parts of your game, you free up mental space to apply advanced concepts. As with many other causes of mistake tilt, the solution is to build a strong knowledge base for the learning process and organize your learning. Working steadily through poker's equivalent of karate belts gives you the best chance not only to avoid tilt, but to sustain a high learning curve. Entitlement tilt. At the root of entitlement is the belief that you have the right or deserve to win for such reasons as working harder, being smarter, and having a longer career than your opponents. It's classic Phil Hellmuth tilt. He often reacts in ways that suggest that he believes his previous accomplishments have earned him the right to win, regardless of how he currently plays. Entitlement tilt happens when something you believe to be rightfully yours has been taken. Winning is a possession that you already own, and when inevitable losses mount, it's as if you've been robbed by someone not deserving of winning, either a regular or a fish. Often the first signs after losing are disbelief, shock, or even laughter, because you can't believe what just happened. Soon after, or as losses pile up, tilt sets in, and players have thoughts or make statements such as, "The cards shouldn't matter, I can outplay them. This guy sucks. How can I possibly lose to him? I'm too good to allow that to happen. This guy doesn't even belong at the same table as me. Other players don't work as hard as I do. I'm supposed to win against fish. I have a great track record and do all the right things. I work harder. I'm better. How the F can I be losing here?" The real problem with entitlement tilt isn't that you believe you're a better player than your opponents. In many cases, that's probably true. The real problem is that you believe being a better player means you should never lose. Pay close attention to what this belief is essentially saying about your mindset, and the real issue emerges. Overconfidence. Overconfidence. Overconfidence means that your confidence is exaggerated or inflated because you believe things about your game or ability that aren't true. The belief that being better than your opponents means you should never lose is unrealistic. Therefore, if your confidence is based on this belief, it's not based on reality. While having confidence is important, it must be based on real ability. Believing you should never lose to your opponents creates false confidence. Poker does a good job of feeding false beliefs to your confidence. A great run not only pads your bankroll, it pads your confidence, unfortunately, in artificial ways for both. Players with entitlement tilt very often assume things that aren't real during a great run. They may think, 1. More of the great run is a direct result of their game than it actually is. 2. They actually own another player's soul. Really, it's their deeper understanding of their game, plus good cards, that produces their control of the situation, but it subtly feels as if they control them. For more on this illusion of control, go to Chapter 8. 3. They have achieved poker nirvana and become the great player they imagined was possible. When a good run fuels your dreams of how good of a poker player you can be, you're set up to tilt when poker slaps you awake. You're a mental fish when you believe you should never lose. Another common exaggerated belief that shows up during a great run is, "I feel like I can beat anyone." While it may feel as if you can beat anyone, you can't. And believing you can without a sick run of cards is a dream. The positive emotions around this belief are so strong, it feels as if you can take on all comers. You can't. You aren't really that good of a player. Variance has inflated your confidence, and now you're primed for tilt when you lose. Wanting to win isn't a problem. The problem is that you believe the lie that says you have a right to win all the time. Believing you deserve to win, or that you can beat anyone, often hides real weaknesses in how you're playing. Since in your mind, winning is already yours, it would be illogical to put in the work necessary to correct the weaknesses in your game. Recognizing these weaknesses would be a blow to your confidence. It would mean you aren't as good as you thought. So in order to remain confident, you'll tell yourself these lies. They got lucky. They don't deserve to win. I win because I play well. If I suck out, it's because I made the right play. I know I work harder than them. I deserve to win. This guy sucks. I played solid. These are attempts to protect your false confidence. You want to believe you're that good. However, if it were true that you deserve to win because you're smarter, better, or work harder, it would mean you also believe the rules of variance don't apply to you. You know variance is part of the game, but deep down you believe or wish you're above it. Once exposed, players often feel relieved that they no longer have to protect these lies. Freed to focus on their game in a real way, they use the mental energy that was previously protecting their confidence to identify and improve their poker weaknesses. It can be tough to face the weaknesses in your game, but it's better than pretending they don't exist. To reduce overconfidence, do the following. 1. Use the mental hand history to eliminate the lies in your game. When you find the correct answer, study them regularly so you can work towards mastering the truth. The better you know the correction, the less you believe the lies, and the more you can control your anger. 2. Inject logic when confidence is rising too high. To reduce overconfidence, use the same strategy that you use to reduce tilt. The only difference is that you're keeping an eye out for the signs that your confidence is rising too high and injecting logic when you notice these signs. 3. Go to Chapter 8 for more information and advice about overconfidence. Injecting logic. You played well. Variance just gave you more money. It doesn't mean you deserve all of it. Losing to fish. It seems illogical to be pissed off about losing to fish. You know they have to win in the short term, yet for some reason it still tilts you. As a player with a huge edge against fish, it makes sense why you would expect to win and consequently tilt when you lose. The problem is that you're equating the level of variance in poker with the level of variance in sports. In major pro sports, such as golf, soccer, baseball, and basketball, when there are large differences in skill between players or teams, variance has little to no effect on the outcome. A professional sports team never loses to an opponent with the level of skill that's analogous to the fish in poker, unless they're competing in a charity event. There isn't enough variance in those sports for it to happen. In baseball, numerous bad calls by umpires will not help a high school team beat the New York Yankees. In golf, the weather and course terrain contribute to a lot of variance, but Tiger Woods would never lose to an average country club golfer, not even if Tiger had to use 3 clubs and hit every shot from his knees. Examples like these are true in every major sport, including mental sports, but they stop with poker. Nowhere else do vastly superior players lose at a higher rate in the short term. As a player with superior skill, you may not realize that entitlement tilt happens when you make the same mistake that a weaker player would make. Poker is partially a battle of the perception of skill. A big part of your profit comes from your opponents miscalculating their actual skill and sitting in games where they are insurmountable underdogs. Winning against you and other regulars helps fuel misconceptions in how they view their skill. They think they're good enough to have a chance against you, while you think your edge is so big that you should win all the time. You and the fish both make errors in calculating your respective skill levels. Your errors cause tilt when you lose. Client story. Liz, Rick James Biatch Herrera. Heads up, no limit, up to 5,100.
I would become incredibly frustrated when I would lose to weaker opponents. It would wreck my whole day. Then Jared opened my eyes by having me think about this idea of me being like a casino. He said, you have to expect to lose in order to keep your customers coming back. Every time I started getting tilty, I would think of this, and it got me back to playing well. Now it seems obvious, but when I'm so consumed with frustration, I never think of stuff like that.
Losing to regulars. When losing against other regulars, you might think, say, or feel something like this. I hate when they think they're better than me. They do things so blatantly bad, I have no respect for their game. I know I've worked harder than this guy. I know I'm better. They must have gotten lucky. I hate when the terrible plays they make cost me money. The central reason why you tilt losing to regulars is the same as why you tilt losing to fish, miscalculating your skill. It's just in a slightly more complex way. Among regulars, the edges are small and more difficult to clearly define. Players often rely on a feeling, or a sense that they have about their edge against other regulars. This sense is something that's indefinable in practical, real, or objective terms, but they're convinced it's true. Not having actual proof of your edge doesn't mean that your gut feeling is wrong. However, if you're relying on a feeling to define your edge, you must take into account the underlying flaws that cause entitlement tilt. If you believe you have an edge but can't prove it, you're relying on a feeling or a sense to define it. Remember, though, that your opinion is biased by the underlying cause of why you tilt when losing to a regular. You want to believe you're the better player, and this flaw makes your opinion unreliable. It very well may be true that you are a better player, but without proof to back up this feeling, you're gambling. Knowing how you stack up against your opponents is a huge part of poker, and it's actually a skill you need to improve along with your technical skills. The stronger this skill, the more clearly you can define your edge, and the less influence negative results have on your mindset. Without this skill, you lack the hard evidence to back up the belief that you have about your edge. Here are a couple of strategies to help you resolve entitlement tilt. 1. Rather than feeling as if you're a better player, prove it. Do this by improving your ability to determine who has more skill between you and the other regulars. It may seem impossible, but as with any other skill, it becomes stronger the more you work on it. Plus, just by working on it, you're already thinking in a way that prevents entitlement tilt from showing up. For more, go to Chapter 8. 2. Avoid getting caught up believing your opponents don't improve. There are often two hidden beliefs within entitlement tilt that causes even more anger. 1. You will always be better. 2. They will always suck. Poker players make shitty psychics. More likely, other regulars are going to improve. If you're a better player right now, that doesn't mean you always will be. Assume they'll improve and put in the necessary work to stay ahead of them. Client story. Mike Saya Song, high stakes, heads up, no limit, and PLO specialist. Deuces cracked coach.
I started getting coached by Jared after a really tough stretch where I broke even for 4 months. I thought being a successful heads up player, it would be easy to make money. But after losing for so long, I just felt defeated. As the sessions got worse and worse, I would play less and less. I started to tilt much easier, and even had a black mark on my hand from punching the desk in frustration. It was really stressful. I started using Jared's advice, and I immediately made some improvement. That was, until I tilted off 22,000 in one session. Normally, I would have gotten really down about it. But I tried to hold off judgment until I could talk with Jared and figure out what the hell happened. The problem was I thought I deserved to win versus this one player. I was super arrogant, but didn't even realize it until we analyzed my mindset. Jared quickly reminded me that I didn't deserve anything in poker. I couldn't just show up and expect to win. If I did, I deserved what was coming. He also said something that was really funny. You're acting like Phil Hellmuth. That was such an insult to me. It even sent a chill down my spine. He's the last guy I want to be like. Now, it's a great reminder to tell myself, you're being Phil Hellmuth. I really understand now that the only thing I can do is play my best, and Jared helped me see how arrogance could destroy my game. So I decided to treat that one opponent in the complete opposite way as I did the first time, as if he was the better player, and studied his game earnestly. I dissected the hand histories for 3 hours, and the next time we played, I had a $24,000 day. I'm now up $30,000 in total against him, and haven't seen him at the tables in a while. In general, I now spend a lot more time working on my game, and I don't criticize myself anymore for mistakes or even for tilting. Now, if I make a mistake or tilt, I just reflect on it and identify all the factors, poker or mental, that caused it. I know I'm never going to be mistake-free, and I don't want to say that I'm tilt-free either, because I'm not. But it's amazing how differently I carry myself now in poker. Ever since our fourth lesson, a lot of weight has been gone. I still feel pressure, but it's never overwhelming, and I take a healthier, more relaxed approach to the game.
Moving up in stakes. Look out for entitlement tilt when moving up in stakes. Players often feel entitled to win because they were winners at the stakes below. As a result, they're often quick to think the regulars at the next limit are terrible. Avoid making these errors. They create false confidence and will damage your potential success at that limit and your long-term success in poker. Revenge tilt. Revenge is common in everyday life, so it's no surprise it's also common in poker. And just as in life, the long-term consequences of revenge at the poker table often outweigh the short-term satisfaction of achieving it. Of course, the consequences aren't in the front of your mind when you play back at constant three betting, berate your opponent, or hunt down a hit and runner. You want revenge. You want to get back at them. You want them to feel your pain. You want to humiliate them for what they just did. And like Tony Montana in Scarface, that piercing look in your eyes says you want revenge. Reacting this way is especially surprising to players who generally don't seek revenge outside of poker. Typically, they don't feel that vengeful towards someone, so wanting to destroy an opponent at the poker table is a bit shocking. Something about poker brings out a vengeful side. For some players, the reasons they seek revenge in poker, and not in life, is that poker pushes them in a way life does not. For other players, who in life tend to keep their anger in, poker is a place where they can finally push back. Revenge is not irrational. It has a history of helping to create laws, unwritten codes of the street, and the unwritten rules that you define as acceptable and unacceptable in poker. Revenge doesn't exist when another player's actions are acceptable to you. When opponents treat you with respect, don't try to outplay you, or keep playing as long as you want them to, there's no reason to be angry. According to your laws of poker, that's what's supposed to happen. As long as they do what you say, there's no reason for revenge. Your opponents don't care about your rules. They play by their own rules and the rules of the game. This means the underlying problem causing revenge tilt is with you, not them. Even though they hit and ran, their constant aggression forced you to take a stand, or their annoying comments made you want to choke them out, they are not the actual problem, unless they're actually breaking poker room rules or the law. Aside from extreme situations, whenever you seek revenge for things players do to set you off, your anger is a signal that indicates there's a flaw in your mental game. To start uncovering these flaws, make a list of the triggers that spark revenge. Here are a few common ones. Having your money taken. Being slighted or not shown enough respect. Constantly being 3-bet. Feeling like you're getting run over. Another player trying to make you look stupid. Your opponent thinking he's better than you. Something about them just pisses you off. Feeling as if your opponent is in your head and knows exactly what you're doing. A player with whom you have history. Injustice tilt tends to be anger towards poker invariants, whereas revenge tilt targets specific players. You may also notice that revenge tilt is more intense when playing heads up. Revenge in poker is only sweet when you use your anger as fuel to play well. Otherwise, it's a losing strategy in the long run. While you may already know that, you need to know it well enough to prevent your game from being hijacked by the desire to exact revenge. As with all the other causes of tilt, knowing the problem doesn't mean you automatically know the solution. Now that you've identified what sets off your revenge tilt, the next step is to understand the reasons you seek revenge, and then you can begin to resolve the flaw in that reasoning. Think about the last time you sought revenge, or a time when that desire was especially strong. What was your underlying motive for revenge? What did you want? What were you trying to accomplish with your actions? Here are some answers to those questions. I want to show them who's better. I want them to feel my pain. I don't want them thinking they're better than me. I don't want to get owned. I'm protecting my bankroll. I want to hurt them. While each of these and other motives have unique details, which are discussed in the upcoming sections, the overall reason you seek revenge is control. Vengeance is rooted in a desire to show the other players that you have control of the situation. They don't. You're letting them know they're not going to outplay you, they're not going to disrespect you, and they're not going to get away with your money, nor can they push you around anymore or try to run you over. You're taking back control and retaliating for the harm they caused. In actuality, trying to take control of the situations in the way you do shows that you're out of control. Ultimately, you have no control of your opponents. You don't get to decide how long they play, how they play, what they say, or whether they get your message. Like you, they are motivated by their own interests. But if your interest is in controlling them, then you have less focus and energy devoted to controlling your game. Playing poorly because of vengeful actions proves you're in far less control of the outcome. The solution to revenge tilt is to use your anger as a way to 1. Identify specific situations where you're giving up control of your game. 2. Resolve the flawed reasons why you give up control. 3. Improve the technical poker mistakes you tend to make at this time. No respect. Being disrespected by another player is often seen as a cue to beat some respect into them. While there are hundreds of reasons to feel disrespected, many of which are legitimate, the bottom line is that you have no control over what other players think of you or your game. That doesn't make what they say right, cordial, or respectful. It just means you can't control what comes out of their mouths. Look at it from their perspective. It's not personal. They are trying to do the same thing. Win. How they try to win is not up to you, just as they can't decide how you play. If what they say or do pisses you off and causes you to tilt, they win on another level. Anger can be a destructive force, but you can also harness that power and use it as fuel to become a stronger player. The key is using your anger to motivate you to play better and work harder off the table, rather than trying to control how they play. Michael Jordan famously said in his Hall of Fame induction speech that he was motivated by all the people who thought that he couldn't succeed, most notably his high school basketball coach who cut him and the sports writers who doubted he could ever win an NBA championship. Jordan even took subtle slights, perhaps unintended by other players, as disrespect so he could have extra motivation to beat them on the court. Is this the purest form of motivation? No, but it worked for him. If you become a better player, win more money, and achieve more success in poker by using revenge to fuel your motivation, it can't be that bad. Ideal? No. Bad? Hell no. When you avenge being disrespected, be sure to recognize the work you put into your game. It's easy to ignore the steps you took to improve your game when the satisfaction from successfully achieving revenge is focused on your opponents. They may have motivated you, but you did the work, so enjoy it. You earned it. Injecting logic. Use your anger as fuel to play better than ever. Facing constant aggression. Some players get tilted by an opponent's aggressive action. It feels like their game is under attack when constantly being 3-bet and C-bet, or their opponents play more than 50% of hands and put them in a lot of difficult spots. While anger is partially related to the cause of revenge tilt, it also protects weaknesses in your game. Defending your game with revenge can happen simply by lacking enough experience or tactical knowledge to handle constant aggression. Once you know how to profitably play these situations, your frustration goes away. In Chapter 2, Neiman Kenkry described how that happened for him. If fixing the weaknesses in your game that are exposed by revenge tilt doesn't eliminate your revenge tilt, there are other reasons for it. Injecting logic. It only seems as if they are all playing back at you. Stay in control and play your game. That's all you can do. Player with history. Many players, in particular those at high stakes and those who live in areas where the player pool is small, have a player with whom they have history. This poker nemesis is someone who always seems to outplay you, get lucky against you, or act like a complete ass when they win. Just hearing this person's name gets you angry, let alone having to sit at the table with them. At this point, beating them has become about much more than just money. Keep in mind, this kind of revenge tilt doesn't have to be obvious to the other player or anyone else to be a problem for you. Keeping your anger hidden as much as possible, especially in live games, is a good strategy. The problem is that internally tilting can still affect your play. It may not cause you to start spewing, but if you're in a tough game, the subtle effects can negatively impact your decision-making. This type of revenge tilt is a form of accumulated tilt. You can't have it towards someone you're playing against for the first time. The problem you have with this player has built up over time. Each time you play, the action means so much more because of that history. The bad blood that's formed over time may be so strong that you get pissed off just by hearing their name or thinking about them. If that's true, when you play them, your anger is intense, even if days, weeks, or even years pass. When you sit across from them, the history between you is a huge part of the action. Use the following advice to take advantage of the history with this player. 1. Use your history rather than having it control you. To do that, start by finding out why you hate this player so much. What is it about them or the action between you that pisses you off? Have they gotten lucky and think they're better than you? Are they actually better and you hate them for it? Are they a rival who always seems to get the better of you? Is it something about them personally? The way they talk, act, or dress? Whatever the reason, recognizing why they get under your skin is key to working through your revenge tilt, because it gives you a chance to figure out what you're trying to control. 2. Expect your anger to be intense. When injecting logic, you're essentially going to be fighting yourself to stay in control. The battle is no longer between you and the player you want to destroy. You also have to fight to keep your anger from causing you to play badly. Your anger towards them may never go away completely, but that's not a bad thing. As long as you can keep it below your tilt threshold, you can use whatever anger remains to fuel your focus and play great. Revenge is great motivation to play at your best, as long as you remain in control of it. 3. They're going to try and get under your skin. If they're used to seeing you blow up, but you're controlling your game more, they may see that as a challenge to try harder to piss you off. It's the game within the game. Be ready to win that too. 4. Look closely at your prior action. In addition to looking for weaknesses in their game, consider how you can use their past knowledge about your tilt to your advantage. This only works if you're able to remain in control and avoid tilt. 5. Use the steps in Chapter 4 to resolve accumulated emotion surrounding your past history with them. 6. Review Mike Song's client story earlier in this chapter. Injecting logic. If you lose control, then your nemesis really wins. Regaining confidence. Getting crushed by an opponent, or when variance makes it seem that way, can make you fight back by playing suboptimally. Sometimes it happens so subtly that the first thing you notice is being in the middle of a fight trying to regain control of the action. Often, you're also fighting to regain your confidence. When getting outplayed and totally owned by your opponent, it can feel as if they've taken your confidence along with your chips. You take a stand. You're not going to get run over. You force the action, trying to exact revenge for them even thinking they can toy with you. You recklessly 3-bet in the hope that you can show down a bluff or try to make ludicrous hero calls. Nothing you do works. It just causes you to lose more. On the surface, you are trying to play back to show them that you're the better player, but you're also trying to prove that to yourself. It's to your advantage when your opponent misinterprets your ability. The only logical reason you'd want to prove to them that they can't run you over is because you need to prove that to yourself. This confidence problem happens when you lack the ability to recognize your skill, your opponent's skill, and variance. When you know your edge in the game, there's no reason for you to try outplaying your opponent in a vengeful way. Developing these skills may not solve your problems with revenge tilt, but they are important pieces of the puzzle. See Chapter 8 for more. Taking your money. When it feels as if the money that's been won off you was stolen, revenge tilt busts out like a debt collector ready to break some kneecaps. You want your money back now. You can't wait to get into a hand with them. Your focus fixates on them. You don't let them out of your sight. God help them if they leave the table, because you will hunt them down until you win your money back. While the intensity of each player's tilt varies, the common denominator is money. What is it about the money you lost that sends you into a blind rage? Money always represents something more than its actual value. So what does it represent to you? Is it competition, since money is the way to keep score in poker? Do you hate losing? Money can be connected to goals, accomplishment, status in the game, or the real need to pay the bills and live. Money serves many purposes. The reasons you tilt to protect losing money is the weakness to address. When you lose money, you perceive that revenge protects you from being viewed as a losing player, from losing the money you need to pay bills, or from falling below your expectations. Revenge is purposeful. It's just misguided. Instead of actually preventing you from losing money, you may lose more of it. As long as you can maintain your edge in the game, especially at times when revenge tilt destroys it, the money will come back, just maybe not from the same player. The correction of this type of tilt is not just to numb the anger that is protecting your money. That short-term solution doesn't address the underlying cause of your anger. So you need to, 1, be less results-oriented. Focusing more on money than how well you're playing puts a lot of pressure on your mental game when you lose. Instead, focus more on the quality of your play, so losing money will matter less in the short run. To improve the skill of recognizing the quality of your skill, go to Chapter 8. 2. View money as an investment in your edge. Your investment isn't going to yield a return every time you play poker. For more, go to Hate Losing Tilt. 3. Review the section Competitiveness under Hate Losing Tilt to understand more about what money represents to you. Enacting revenge. Losing is painful. You probably hate it. You may even hate the players you lose to. Over time, the names no longer matter. You just hate whoever beat you, and you want them to feel your pain. Intense as that sounds, often the pain you feel when losing is what forms the roots of revenge. The battle for supremacy at the table is also a battle for who's going to feel the pain of losing and who will feel the satisfaction of victory. Essentially, revenge tilt is a defensive strategy designed to protect you from feeling the pain of losing. Except the reality is, not everyone experiences losing in the same way as you. Many of the players you want to inflict pain on aren't going to feel it because losing doesn't bother them as much as it bothers you. If you want to resolve this type of revenge tilt, you need to reduce the amount of pain you feel when losing. The steps outlined in Hate Losing Tilt can help. Your soul owned. You have to look at the reverse side of revenge in order to complete the picture of why you seek it. How you feel when running over another player. Does it feel as if you're in complete control? As if you own their soul? If so, how intense are those positive emotions associated with power and control? Since this type of revenge tilt may seem odd, you may not think you have it at first. Look closely at the intent behind your anger to find out if deep down you believe you have the ability to own another player's game and work them like a puppet master. It's not possible to be in control of another player's game, but it makes sense why it can appear that way. Deep understanding mimics control. When you understand a player's game better than they do, you basically know how to exploit their weaknesses and stay at least one step ahead of their adjustments. They have no way to beat you. You are in complete control of the match or the action. The only way you'll lose is because of variance. While you're in complete control of the action, that doesn't mean you control them. It means you understand their game. Plus, you're probably playing really well and feeling great about your game. Both of these factors add to a sense of being in complete control, and you also might be running well. Believing you control another player's game makes sense for these reasons. They just happen to be flawed. Revenge comes into the picture because losing makes it appear as if your opponent owns you. If you believe you can own another player, that means you also believe someone can own you. Revenge is your way of protecting against that happening. Desperation tilt. Desperation is a feeling that can be hard to recognize. Spotting it requires looking closely at the intent behind actions such as trying to get unstuck, chasing losses, playing outside your bankroll, raising every hand, constantly checking results, forcing action, jumping up in stakes, playing monster long sessions, and rapidly reloading. What makes them acts of desperation is the intent or urge to do everything possible to win immediately, get even, or avoid taking a loss. In a flash, you can wake up having spewed off a ton of money, grinding for 16 hours straight or worse. Avoiding the urge to do everything to win is tough because it just gets stronger and stronger the more you lose. It's an itch you have to scratch, so walking away from poker becomes increasingly harder to do. Winning, it seems, is the only thing that makes the itch go away. You get some relief from desperation if you're able to squeeze out a victory, or at least avoid taking a big loss, but it's only temporary. Once the losses pile up again, desperation comes back as though it was never gone. Actually, it never left. It was just hiding. Much like a person addicted to drugs will do anything to score their next fix, a poker player desperate to win their money back will do almost anything to win. Actually, that's not true. They won't do anything. The distinction between what they will and will not do determines whether they have a performance issue or a gambling problem. All the issues described in this book exist along a spectrum of intensity. Poker players with mild enough forms of desperation tilt can use the advice in this section to make solid improvement. Others could benefit from professional help. There's a line for each player between a performance issue and a gambling problem. If desperation tilt is a problem for you, deciding which side of the line you're on is a judgment call. Can you remain in enough control when this problem is at its worst and afford any personal or financial losses that may happen while working on this problem yourself? Or do you need the help of a psychologist who specializes in gambling problems? Desperation tilt is a slippery slope that takes hard work to prevent. When it happens to a skilled player, it's hard to comprehend afterwards just how badly they played. The gap between how they play normally and when desperation tilt is so wide, it can seem as if they're possessed by a demon. Without knowing why it happens, it's impossible to prevent. This uncertainty only adds more emotional pain to an issue barely comprehensible already. Desperation tilt is a form of accumulated tilt. The intensity of the anger that shows up when trying to get unstuck is so strong that it very quickly takes over your mind. Old emotion floods the mind and drowns it in so much anger that your reaction to the situation is beyond reason. You do things that don't make sense and tilt even more because of how irrational you seem to be. If this pattern has been going on for a while, the anger that floods your mind has been building up for years. Even if it's only recently become severe in poker, working away from the table is mandatory to build up the mental muscle needed to make it a fair fight. Accumulated tilt is the real wild card with this type of tilt. The more you've accumulated, the harder it is to keep yourself thinking and thus remain in control. If you try to take desperation tilt head-on without serious preparation, you have little to no chance of correcting it. The accumulated anger quickly overwhelms your mind, and you play terribly. Rather than showing up unprepared, work away from the action with a sense of urgency, as if your poker life depends on it. It does. When losing feels good. Sometimes the urge to win is so strong, losing feels good. Admitting you want to lose sounds a bit crazy, but it happens often enough to regular people that it doesn't necessarily mean you're nuts. Losing can feel good for a number of logical reasons. It gets the pain over with quickly, you can control it, and it can be a real relief from the pressure to win. Players with desperation tilt often get stuck trying to figure out why they want to lose. That uncertainty adds more frustration, the tilt of tilt, and ultimately makes desperation tilt more likely to happen again. Desperation tilt is caused by underlying issues already covered in this chapter. Desperation tilt is like a trapdoor that lies beneath each type of tilt, most commonly hate losing tilt, waiting to drag you down into poker hell. poker players with desperation tilt hate walking away from the table stuck and simply don't want to end a session down money no matter how long it takes to win. The longer and deeper the losses get, the worse they play, the stronger the anger becomes, and the more likely they'll be to do something drastic such as jumping up in stakes, shoving any hand, or straddling every big blind. While the other types of tilt can lead to desperation tilt, you may not be sure which one causes you to become desperate yet. That's fine. The first goal is to prevent desperation tilt, since it can cause major damage to your bankroll, confidence, and motivation. The primary goal of this section is to help you prevent that from happening. Start with this standard strategy. Then, after paying closer attention to the triggers and signs of tilt, eventually you'll identify the type of tilt that's causing desperation. Non-negotiable strategy. Follow all or the majority of these steps to prevent desperation tilt from destroying your game. 1. Have a sense of urgency. It's a major mistake to take desperation tilt or the steps to correct it too casually. If you think that you'll wake up one day to the problem being gone, you're dreaming and gambling with your mental game. For every player who stops cold turkey like a smoker who one day quits and never smokes again, there are many more who fail trying. If you want your tilt problem to improve, it has to be your top priority. 2. Write a tilt profile. Be sure to detail the early signs that tilt is rising, what may be triggering your tilt, and the first poker mistakes you make. Study your profile often and before you play. Add new details when you find them. One of the major reasons you have trouble controlling tilt is the early warning signs aren't even on your radar. In order to have a chance at stopping tilt, you have to be able to spot the signs when your anger starts rising. 3. Set strict stop loss. Sure, you've probably set these before and blown through them, but that doesn't make it a bad strategy. It's unlikely you combined a stop loss with other steps to prevent tilt, or realized how important it is to maintain conscious control of your emotions. 4. Take regular breaks or use a timer. Maintaining emotional control throughout the session is critical. If anger starts taking over your ability to think, you're far more likely to succumb to the intense accumulated tilt that follows close behind. While this strategy may keep you from playing your best, it's far better than the alternative. 5. Review your emergency response. Before every session, review your strategy to prevent desperation tilt as if rehearsing for an emergency. This keeps all the details of your plan fresh in your mind, so you're ready to take emergency action. 6. Take aggressive action towards the early signs of tilt. Once you spot the signs of tilt, work hard to control your anger by implementing each part of your strategy. 7. Recognize small steps forward. Recognizing sessions where you made progress with tilt gives you a boost in confidence to keep you working hard. Remember, increasing recognition or awareness of tilt, not control of tilt, can often be the first step. Desperation tilt is a major problem, and eliminating it takes sustained effort over a long period of time. When small improvements go unnoticed, you might abandon a strategy that's actually working. For more on tracking improvement, go to Chapter 4. 8. After identifying the type or types of tilt that lead to desperation, resolve it using the mental hand history. Taking these steps reduces the amount of anger that shows up when triggered, which makes it easier to implement any of the previous 7 steps. 9. Better understand the learning process. A contributing cause of desperation tilt is inaccurate assumptions about learning. Review Chapter 2 so you know what to expect. 10. Develop stable confidence by reading Chapter 8. Players with stable confidence don't have desperation tilt. Using tilt to improve your play. In the beginning of this chapter, tilt was introduced as something that could benefit your game. Tilting is far from an ideal way to improve, but when it's a real part of your game, make use of what it gives you rather than just having it abuse you. Here's a quick refresher on how that's possible. When anger becomes too intense and crosses your threshold, your brain malfunctions. Higher brain functions such as decision-making, perception, and emotional control begin shutting down. You make terrible decisions because you aren't thinking straight. According to the AOM, losing your ability to think means you've lost the information that's currently in the process of being learned. Conscious competence. What's left are the skills or knowledge in your game that you've mastered. Unconscious competence. That includes the solid parts of your game that you want to keep and the weak parts that you need to improve. Everything that did not show up, you simply have not learned or mastered yet and is still in the process of being learned. When analyzing the quality of your play on tilt, consider these 3 categories. 1. Core knowledge that is solid and is your mastered strength. 2. Core knowledge that is outdated, old, and is your greatest weakness, aka bad habits. 3. Knowledge in the process of being learned. Recognizing the mastered strengths in your game is key for 3 reasons. 1. You identify areas you never have to work on again. 2. You create a balanced perspective of your game. 3. you recognize the limit of how badly you can play. Your game can't fall into some black hole that can deteriorate into complete oblivion. These strengths are guaranteed to show up no matter how tilted you become. Recognizing your greatest weaknesses is important because these are the easiest parts of your game to correct. While the reality of your game at its worst can be harsh to accept, the good news is that when you correct these mistakes, you have less to think about. Since the corrections to your weaknesses haven't been mastered, they require thought. When you master the corrections to the level of unconscious competence, you free up mental space to take your game to an even higher level. The best way to start correcting your greatest weaknesses is by making a list of them, along with the corrections to each one, and reviewing it before you play. Then, while playing, do everything you can to make those corrections at times when you recognize anger rising. Since these weaknesses are so basic compared to your strengths, they don't require much thought, which means they'll be easy to correct the next time you're on tilt. However, you still must treat them as a priority. The correction to a weakness is only mastered when you have proven you can correct it while tilting. That means you can take it off your list and replace it with your next greatest weakness. Remember, no matter how good you become, you'll always have weaknesses. Go to the section, When a Mistake is Not a Mistake, for a slightly more advanced way of using tilt to analyze your game. Keeping records. When using the strategy above, write out your list of notes and keep them organized by date. It doesn't take long and is valuable for these two reasons. 1. Writing out your notes makes each weakness more real and more likely to stand out and be corrected when tilting. While these mistakes you make on tilt are obvious afterwards, they need to be obvious when it matters most, before you act. Writing them down speeds up that process. 2. As you continue to write out your weaknesses over time, you create a paper trail that allows you to prove you're improving as a player. When making progress with tilt, the intensity of your anger may seem the same, but your game may have improved. Your notes give you a way to compare your current worst to your previous worst months ago, and prove whether the back end of your game improved. Remember, improvement happens in two ways. Your best gets better, and your worst gets better. Using the steps above allow you to prove if your worst is improving, which indicates you're doing the right things. This way, the next time you tilt, you'll have a small positive to take away at a time when you would have previously only seen negatives. It's also possible that no improvements have been made. Here are a few reasons. The cause of your tilt is not resolved. Tilting is more severe than at any other time since you started keeping records. Your approach to improving isn't working. Review chapters 2, 3, and 4. Chapter 6. Fear. In a poker world where everything short of playing your best is called tilt, players barely notice anxiety and fear. Defining tilt as just being caused by anger allows fear to emerge as a real contributor to mental game problems. Fear was there all along, but unless you had the ability to spot it, it's likely you'd miss its role in causing problems in your game.